Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's better than a normal, shape-shifting, world-conquering alien bent for the destruction of the Earth and of some of our finest heroes? A super version of that that also has superpowers. And that is what we're going to be discussing today. We're going to be looking at the very first appearance, the origin story, if you will, of a character who is now finally making his way to the, not the big screen, just the small screen here on the Secret Invasion show. That is the Super Skrull. Before we get into that, I've got to bring in my super co-host, Remzo Martinez. Remzo, what's happening?
Bro, I'm surprised we actually haven't done a lot of Skrull stuff on the show. The last time we discussed the Skrulls was over a year ago during that Black Panther comic where he was leading the Fantastic Four and they went to some Skrull planet in another universe that got eaten by the Marvel zombies.
That was a fun one. That was unexpected, a rare Remzo gem. No, that's not true. You have some.
That's on top of the pile though.
Indeed.
I wanted to talk Skrulls with Secret Invasion going on, but I thought, you know, it'd be too on the nose to do Secret Invasion, the series and stuff. And, you know, I think we need to get back to when the Skrulls were like really starting to stand out, because you got a lot of aliens in comics. You don't really have characters that really come out of that and stand on their own. And the Super Skrull is one of my favorites because he got his own limited series during the Annihilation era of Marvel. And that was freaking awesome.
Well, it's interesting the way that they're kind of to somewhat spoil Secret Invasion, the way that they're doing the Super Skrull there, because they haven't introduced the Fantastic Four. And as you'll see in the story today, the Super Skrull, the original Super Skrull, is literally a regular Skrull. So he shapeshifts, only he also has all of the powers of each member of the Fantastic Four, only better, because he's got better powers than all of them. And that's kind of the extent of it. But because they haven't introduced the Fantastic Four in the MCU proper yet, they had to bring in the Super Skrull. They didn't have to, but they decided they wanted to bring in the Super Skrull concept. So instead they show us like glimpses. And again, I'm probably spoiling this for you and I don't care.
Oh, I know about this part.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they show glimpses of, because the Gravik is working on this, some kind of, he even uses the phrase Super Skrull. He's going to turn all of them into Super Skrulls. And they show like the, what they're working on in the lab, if you will, and who they're like drawing from to create the Super Skrulls. And you see Groot, so that can suffice for like the stretchy powers of Mr. Fantastic. I think Cull Obsidian, you see. So it's like the strength of the thing. There's a couple others I kind of forget. But anyway, point being, it's interesting that they did bring in the Super Skrull, seemingly with similar powers, before they bring in the Fantastic Four in the MCU. But you know, who knows what goes on back there nowadays?
I don't know what goes on Feige's mind anymore.
But we don't have to worry about that, because we are going so far prior to even, I would imagine, even the existence of Kevin Feige on this very Earth. This is way back into, I want to say, is it 64? Is this issue come out? Let's see. Why doesn't it say a year here anywhere? Anyway, it's the very early 60s is when this came out. I can tell you the date. It came out on September 18th. They don't have the, because they didn't even imagine that we'd be thinking of comics in terms of years at any point. I think they're just like, all right, we got a book out. This isn't going to be a thing that's.
They were just happy to go month to month at that point.
Exactly. They're just happy to be there. But I really do. Okay. So this is an all time classic team. This is still the foundational Fantastic Four team of Stan Lee, writing, drawn by Jack Kirby. So you got the big guns here on this one. And I do really love the way, had you read this issue before, by the way? Had you gotten this far in the Silver Age Fantastic Four before?
I have, but ironically, I got it through the original Fantastic Four cartoon, which was basically them taking the comic book strips and animating them. So I went ahead and watched that whole run at one point. I remember it was on Disney back in, like, you know, 2003, 2004. And then after that, I went ahead and got Fantastic Four Classics Volume 1 and 2 and actually read them. And I was like, oh, they basically just ripped straight from the panels, which was pretty cool. So I got a soft spot for this story in particular, just because it really sets the tone for what makes Marvel back then different. You know, you can't help but love these OG stories. I'll just put it that way.
I believe this came out in 1962. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was close. That was a guess, though. That was pretty good. It came out 1963. That's interesting. Damn. Because it says, oh, yeah, I remember now. This used to be how comics worked. I'm not sure if it still is, because there's the release date, but then there's the cover date. And the cover date would be a couple months after the release date. I remember this when I started reading comics in the 90s, and I never understood why.
They do that up to 1 month now because they're preparing themselves to go ahead and start producing the next issue. But they also do that in case there's ever an issue of distributors.
Interesting. Well, that being the case, we do start off. This is, of course, well before Marvel actually had anything resembling what you might call a recap page. But they do this in sort of a very campy, sort of funny way here to me when they start off in the Fantastic Four.
I love
the
way, Mark, I'm sorry.
Yes.
But have you had your coffee today?
Thank you very much for mentioning that, Remzo, because if I seem a little off...
We can't read comics without our coffee.
If I seem a little off, a little slower than normal, it's because I only just started moments ago drinking from this mug, which of course does contain fine coffee from our friends at Fox and Sons. Go check them out at foxandsons.com, foxnsons.com. What goes on at foxandsons.com? A plethora of amazing coffee beans that will be delivered directly to your house by the man himself, Stephen Fox. That's not true. He's not going to actually show up at your house, unfortunately.
It'd be cool if he did.
That would be pretty
cool. We're creating Stephen Fox lore. He's like Santa Claus.
You know, he might even have a certain level. If you buy enough bags, he will literally come to your house, have a cup of coffee with you, and then take off. No, but for now, he just ships them to your house. But what's great is that, first of all, if you haven't sampled this coffee yet, stop what you're doing. Literally pause this episode. Go to foxandsons.com and pick a bean. If you don't like coffee, you're crazy. Start drinking coffee. But if you really can't drink coffee, some people can't. My wife can't, which leaves more for me. I know you got a family member, a husband, a father, a son, you know someone that drinks coffee. So you want to head over to foxandsons.com, grab a bean, any bean, get yourself 15% off your sample order, we'll say for now, because you're going to come back for more, 15% off any order over $25 using discount code what, Remzo?
Second Print Pod.
Exactly. You got to spell it all out. Don't do the two, the end. Write the word second. Don't be lazy, all right? Second Print Pod gets you 15% off that order. And then once you're hooked, as you will be, you want to go back. And I want to be clear about this. There might have been some confusion. You can't use the discount code on the subscriptions, but there's a reason for that. It's because the subscriptions are already being discounted for you already by Stephen Fox. He's taking $4 off right now every subscription bag. So,
like us, he's a man of the people.
Exactly. So you cannot lose with Fox and Sons coffee. It is literally what is powering this show. As I'm about to go take a sip. So fill some air, because I am going to take a big sip right now.
Now back to our regularly scheduled programming. This was as close to a recap page as we were going to get.
There you go. That's some damn fine coffee, as Dale Cooper would say. Now, so the Fantastic Four are sitting around, huddled around the TV, watching a recap of their last episode, or the last issue, I guess you might say. I did it there. I did it. But this is kind of an episode because they're watching TV, so you can see the confusion. They're doing a recap of the news is basically recapping their battle with Dr. Doom. He's saying, thanks to the Fantastic Four, the menace of Dr. Doom seems to be over, at least for the present. But if you ever see this man, you are urged to notify the police immediately. And it's pretty funny because, Johnny Storm is like, does this news guy really think like Dr. Doom is just walking around the street in this costume? Like, that's who you're going to have to look out for. And it's just little stuff like this that reminds me why I almost always enjoy reading Silver Age comics, because it's this kind of sort of campy, sometimes even fourth wall breaking ish type
self-deprecating
humor. Very much so self-deprecating, in the sense that they're almost making fun of the comic medium itself many times. The Thing even says here, because Mr. Fantastic is saying, oh, he's recapping our last adventure, and Thing definitely breaks the fourth wall. He says, yeah, that's for guys who are too cheap to buy our mag. Like, so what's your mag in the context of this story? It's obviously he's referring to the Fantastic Four comic book. So for all the complaints, including mine, about the fourth wall breaking She-Hulk, Hulk. This was very common in the 60s, but it really was, this is really before, I don't want to say they didn't take, I think they did take their internal continuity seriously, but like I said, they weren't thinking about the year 2000 here. The year 2000! They were just thinking about, they were just happy to be here. So they're fine to poke fun at the medium. They're not worried about, does that necessarily make sense that they're referring to themselves being in a comic? No, because it was just fun, and it would just be, it wouldn't override the story. It would just be a little line like we're getting here. But before we even get into the story, just what do you think about this opening, this completely fourth wall breaking, we're just recapping our last adventure for the audience sort of intro here?
What I love about this era of Fantastic Four is also what I love about X-Men, what I love about Spider-Man. Marvel was willing to give Stan Lee a lot of flexibility after almost a decade of him writing stories that were just not doing well because they weren't allowing him and his artists to be as creative as they could be. So when it came to Fantastic Four, which is already a series that Lee had to fight for, you know, they were really like, you know what, Stan? Do what you can, because we're going to give you a few months to handle this. And if you can handle it, we'll keep going. And obviously he did, because Fantastic Four issue one was one of the best selling Marvel comics at the time. It would not be topped until Amazing Spider-Man issue one, almost, I think, a year or so later. So for him to be this experimental of things, I think Stan Lee gets a lot of crap these days. The Disney documentary does not help his legacy at all. I think they go too negative, but like there's a stigma that Stan Lee was not as creative and that he took a lot of his ideas. No, we're not talking about Bob Kane and Bill Finger. No, Stan Lee was a creative person. He had a wild imagination, and he did put as much into the books as his artist did, as Kirby did, as Ditko did. So this is just very classic Stan Lee. You don't have a lot of the modern storytelling in comics without moments like this to just build upon.
Indeed. With that being said, we will dive into our actual story here. And as we continue with sort of some of this campy humor here, so they're about to cut to footage, and the news anchor tees it up. He's like, oh, we're going to go to some footage of the Thing. And then right when they go to like the footage of supposedly of the Thing, like, you know, battling Dr. Doom or what have you, they say, all right, well, we were running really late tonight, so we got to cut away. We got to go. But before we do, we're sponsored by Tootsie's Dog Treats. And they show up this video of all these like little puppies, and then Thing just gets so mad. Like this was the classic Thing. I mean, this was always part of his character, even going into modern times, of him having a little bit of a temper, but he was just the biggest freaking baby in history here. He starts throwing things around. He grabs the TV, like smashes the TV. He's just throwing a freaking temper tantrum here, just because he didn't get his full time to shine on the local news. But they really like what the early Fantastic Four, whereas now the things we see here are like elements of their characters, because they do sort of treat them more as complete, more complicated individuals. Here, they were really just, they would just kind of hone in on one characteristic, and like that is what you get from this character. Like Reed Richards is just a nerd, so he's a nerd. That's all. He only does nerd things. Johnny Storm is just this hothead who like likes to party and like hang out with chicks. So that's what he does. He's a hothead. You know, and Thing. As a temper, and Thing is a big baby, and Thing gets mad about everything and smashes everything. That's what you get. But this is and Sue is, well, Sue's a woman in the 60s, so let's be honest. She's invisible for a reason.
They were kind of like on the nose of that one.
They're like, what do we do? Just do what we normally do. Just have her, we ignore her. Okay, so anyway.
Make sandwiches, Sue.
So they're all going to go off and do stuff. And, you know, they're calling Ben a big clown and everything. So whatever, that's just kind of our setup to the show. And then we see that Sue, so I love the 60s, man. We really got to read more Silver Age stuff. So they're all getting dressed to go out on the town. Ben Grimm, you guys got to follow along with this issue. Okay, go to your Marvel Unlimited or some other method and find Fantastic Four number 18. And Thing is in like this pinstriped suit, this green pinstripe suit with a fedora and a freaking scarf on his neck, just ready to, which is funny to me because like, okay, so he's angry that he doesn't get enough time on the news, right? So he didn't get, you know, his full what have you, his full recognition. But when he goes out, he wants to cover himself up and doesn't want to be seen as the Thing. So it seems like a little bit of a conflicting narrative there in the Thing's mind here. Does he want to be unseen and unknown, or does he want to be the hero known as the Thing? I don't know. But at the same time, Mr. Fantastic and Sue Storm are getting dressed to go, and they're going to go swimming on a date, but they're wearing these fucking space outfits. So what do they got? And Ben's like, what do you got, swimming pools on the moon? Then we get a little globe propaganda here when we see Reed's idea for the so it's called a experimental passenger ICBM. So it's an intercontinental ballistic missile that puts people in it. And then they fly places. I'm not sure how it lands. They don't really get into that, but we're to believe that they're just going to go take this little intercontinental ballistic missile. Say that three times fast,
dude. It's less phallic than Jeffrey Bezos's rocket ship.
It's somewhat less phallic, but we're still very much in the phallic realm. Let's be honest here. That's the Fantastic Four. They explore the negative zone and in some other issues, the phallic realm. We don't really get into that conversation as much, but it is part of the canon as far as I know. Then we head off to the Skrull homeworld, where what struck you about these Skrulls, Remso? Anything? Do they look at any different than our normal Skrulls to you?
Remember when we did that really old Submariner comic from like World War II, and it's like
these look exactly like those guys.
They look exactly like them, but more frog-like.
Yeah,
they tried to make the Skrulls look really alien, more like, you know, not like as far from human as possible, other than the fact that they walk on 2 feet and stuff. And now it's like, you know, we go from this to like 30 years later, we get was it Lijah, who's like the super hot Skrull chick, and it's like, damn, like they had some changes going on. The one that marries Johnny.
Yeah. Oh, I love Lijah. Big Lijah.
Yeah.
The 90s was a great thirst trap for young Fantastic Four fans, I'll tell
Good
you.
Good job, Marvel.
Between Lijah and sexy Sue. I mean, they did some things right there. But yeah, these Skrulls do not look... They look much more comical, I would say. They look much more amphibious, and they're not really the green hue that we're used to. They're a much more like... They're almost like a light blue, a light greenish blue. They look a lot less menacing, I would say. But they're watching the Earth because that's what
they do. Frog people.
I guess they just have telescopes, and they've been waiting for their opportunity. And I guess this is their chance. They've decided this is the time. The moment is at hand, I guess, because the Fantastic Four are splitting up. It's always funny to me when like entire alien races are fixated with a specific hero team. Like, they just got to defeat the Fantastic Four and we're good. They're not thinking about the Avengers. They're not thinking about Spider-Man. They're not thinking about the Hulk or Iron Man, any of the guys that were around at this time. It's just like, if we get rid of the Fantastic Four, it's a cakewalk from here, which I always find pretty funny. It's almost like they do, like, obviously this is a connected universe, but they don't lay into it, I think, as much early on. They did keep, even though there were some crossovers here and there, they kept a lot of these characters sort of sequestered in their own way, whereas world-shaping events, they wouldn't even try to explain why, you know, because nowadays when they had big events and characters are missing, they'll have an explanation. They'll be like, oh, the Fantastic Four is off in space, which means they just didn't feel like writing them into this, but they're off in space. They're doing something else. But here you would want to get, eventually when this whole thing goes down, some like, oh, the Avengers are, you know, they're in another dimension right now. So they can't help with this. But no, here it's just the Skrulls have decided the only thing in their way that they need to concern themselves with conquering the Earth is taking out Fantastic Four. I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah. It's kind of like in Iron Man 3. Everyone was like, where are the Avengers? Like, Tony Stark is, quote, dead, and the Avengers don't show up like 6 months after their big movie.
Him. Exactly. Yeah.
Never an explanation for that. I think everyone's just like, yeah, Tony will be fine.
And couldn't have, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if Doctor Strange had come out yet. I don't know. There's enough characters with mental powers that you think, like, Wanda could have been like, oh yeah, I can see
Tony's
him.
Alive.
He's alive. I can sense him or whatever. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. And we're learning that the plan on the Great Skrull homeworld, they've collected all their top scientists, put all their greatest minds at work to do what? Cure Skrull cancer. No, that's not what they did. They decided to put all of their great Skrull minds together to create the Super Skrull. And they're going to and then here he is. It's so funny to me, this bit. I think we need to at least do quarterly revisits to the Silver Age, because it is always, I always remember, because in my mind, the Silver Age kind of sucks in its own way, and it does in its own way. It's not, you're not going to get the same
sophisticated.
Exactly. You're not going to get the same depths of stories that you get now. But, well, I shouldn't say now. That maybe you got at an earlier point in between now and then.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
Because I would rather read Silver Age than almost anything coming out of Marvel right now. Maybe literally anything coming out of Marvel right now. Because it was just in the situations where it wasn't that good. They just do such a good job, and when I say they, I mean Stan Lee, of being so campy and so cheesy that you find yourself laughing. And you know what? If I'm entertained, I'm entertained. You know, maybe nowadays I want to, maybe if I'm reading a 90s comic, I want to be entertained by a gritty, sophisticated story that makes me question, you know, all sorts of things and makes me think about philosophy and who knows, you know? But that wasn't really how we did things back then. And maybe when I'm reading a 60s story, that's not what I want. When I'm reading a story from the Silver Age, I wanted to see some pure camp and I want to be laughing at the absurdity of it all. And I'm only a couple pages in and I'm already doing that here.
Oh, yeah. It's so charming.
Yes. And we do unveil the Super Skrull. I just think it's so funny because he looks like any other Skrull when he first
shows up. Frog person.
He just looks like any other frog guy. He kind of has some more muscles, maybe. Like he's a little bit of a bigger pecs, I would say.
Hitting the gym, getting swole.
So they
he's on Sports Skrull Illustrated.
They introduce the Super Skrull to the Emperor and they're like, guess what? He's got all the powers of the Fantastic Four. And even more. So let's let the demonstration begin. And first, they're going to show off the Mr. Fantastic powers. Now, hey, he says, hey, are you looking for some Spectofish, Emperor? Do you want some Spectofish from the deepest part of the Skrull Sea? No problem. They're 100 miles away, but he's going to go get them. So he stretches himself 100 miles, grabs these. And by the way, impressive fishing skills. Like he can just do one reach into the Skrull Sea and grab the Spectofish. I'm impressed by the Super Skrull. Super Skrull's very unheralded fishing technique, hand fishing technique.
He can go get that GameCube controller right next to the Titanic.
There you go. Exactly. If only we had the Super Skrull back then. He demonstrates that power. He also demonstrates that he can flame on just like Johnny Storm. But what they really emphasize here is that in each circumstance, he not only has the Fantastic Four power, as I mentioned before, he has it, but better. He has it on steroids, so he can stretch way farther than Mr. Fantastic. He doesn't just possess regular fire like the Human Torch. He also possesses an antimatter fireball, which can destroy anything, even the peak of a small mountain. So this guy is tough. He can also lift this thing. They have this, apparently, I don't know what they had this weight, this cosmic, they call it the cosmic generator. Anyway, he's able to lift the cosmic generator, and they say it weighs over 100 tons. This is incredible. I can't believe how strong this guy is. And just when they're saying, you know, I want to congratulate the Super Skrull, he's like, where did he go? And then he says, hey, here I am. I'm invisible, just like women. And he shows up and he's like, that's my last power. My last power is to be invisible like the Visible Woman. And then he implies, I also have one more power, but I'm not going to tell you. What the fuck? If I was the Emperor, and he's fine with that? He's like, no, I'm the fucking Emperor of the Skrulls, and I paid for this. I want to know your last power. Like, you don't get to hide that from me. Obviously, it's to hide it from the reader because they want us to be surprised later. But, you know, if I was the Skrull Emperor, I'm like, no, bitch, tell me the fucking power. Do you know how much money I just put into this thing? 700 billion Skrull dollars. No, show me the damn power. But that's just me. Maybe I would have been a different kind of emperor.
I think you're justified.
All right, so 1 week later, because I guess that's how much time it takes for a Super Skrull to travel to Earth, we see that Ben is still out doing Ben Grimm things, dressed in his hat and his scarf, and I think he looks like he's at a bowling alley here, but he just crushed the bowling ball when he's trying to squeeze his fingers into it. So he's just out and about. Doing Ben Grimm things. When then there is a report on the radio. They're all at the mall. They're all like in their normal garb here. And Mr.
For the Zoomers listening, a mall is where people used to hang out, eat food, and buy shit.
So Mr. Fantastic can't shop for clothes in the traditional sense, right? Because all his clothes have to be that special, like, Fantastic molecule.
I don't think we were supposed to think too much into it.
Okay, because he's stretching around here and seems to have his suit stretching with him.
It's a very expensive suit. But, I need my suit to stretch, and that's like a week at the tailor and like a few $100.
This is I don't remember Reed having, like, in this one scene, he's bouncing through the mall, and he's just I don't remember him having bouncy powers, but apparently he has, not only can he stretch, he can also bounce because he's turned himself into this fucking bouncy thing, which is pretty
cool. They were really interested in making him like Noodle Man back then. They don't really do that these days.
Yeah. Noodle Man doesn't have quite the same ring to it, although.
Well, Plastic Man was taken, and no one was going to do Elongated Man because that would be dumb.
No, because that's weird. who would ever do that? So the Super Skrull, it's funny how he shows up. He just shows up and he says, I claim this planet and all it possesses. And he shows that he decides New York City is the place to do this, which just kind of makes sense, I guess. He's like, and then everyone's like, what's going on? Is this advertising for something? And this is so funny because he's in no way looks menacing, like at all. He just gets off his little chariot, puts down a flag, does some flame stuff, puts it in the ground. He's like, all right, hi, I'm the Super Skrull. I'm here. There's one panel here. I think it's on page, I don't know, page 10, in the middle of the page where just look at the Super Skrull's face there. He just looks completely
frog comical. Person.
He looks completely comical. He doesn't look remotely threatening, but he does then, as these people tell him to get lost, he does sort of throw them aside. So now he's getting a little more violent. And from the Skrull homeworld, the Skrull Emperor is watching all of this go down, and he's pretty pleased so far. But he says, look, don't get cocky. Yeah, he's talking to the Skrull scientist guy. He's like, don't get cocky yet, all right? The Fantastic Four haven't even showed up. He's like, well, don't worry. Human Torch is on the way, so watch out. And sure enough, at first, the Super Skrull does quite handily take out the Human Torch because, not like I mentioned, he doesn't just have regular fireball powers. He has antimatter super heat flame powers. So this totally messes Johnny up, gets him out of the way. Reed is able to catch Johnny in his noodle net, I guess you might say, as he falls and saves him. Then of course, Ben Grimm being Ben Grimm, he can't, again, I keep going back to this stuff. This is the kind of silly stuff that you just don't see today. And I wish there was more of it, to be frank. Now that I'm reading more of the Silver Age stuff, there's no necessity to put this scene in this comic, but it's so funny because like everyone else has a way to get there faster. So Reed is doing his bouncy thing. I don't know. Maybe Sue is floating on some shit. I have no idea. And Jeff's some invisible thing. But Johnny's flying over there. But Thing is just a big lug. So he's got to run down there, and he ends up like running through this apartment store and sliding. Like he smashes this, by the way, just wanton property destruction along the way here. He smashes an escalator so he can use it as a slide instead of just walking down it or whatever. He destroys an escalator in a mall, slides down it, and he's going wee, like he's having a blast, like he's a little kid just trying to get to this thing in the city. And it's just, there's no purpose for it other than to show us Ben Grimm being silly and comics being silly. But what did you think of this just like three panel scene of Ben Grimm doing the escalator slide?
It's just funny. And like, superhero books were not meant to be funny all the time. Like, you had camp, but then there was just like outright comedy. And I think this is the blending of genres where it's like, what the superhero was able to do was what like the Western era of movies was not able to do. What like, crime noir films in the 20s and 30s weren't able to do. Romances. You could not switch genres. What I love about comics is, depending on the story and the scene, they could be a lot of things at once. And that's what Stan Lee was really good at doing. Jack Kirby had a big influence on that as well, because he could just draw anything and make it look good. So when you have moments like this, it's like you can have the comedy of this moment of him taking down an escalator, but you can also have the fact that the Super Skrull is menacing. They were pioneers of this. I don't think they get enough credit.
Absolutely. So returning to our action, so to speak, now, as Ben is still huffing his way over, trying to make his way over to this battle here, we have Reed going after him, and he pulls pretty much the only offensive move he can is wrap himself around the Super Skrull. I guess his plan was to suffocate him. He didn't really say. He just like, I'm going to wrap myself around him. That should contain him for now. But as we know, Super Skrull's got all the powers of the Fantastic Four, so he's not contained by that at all. He just keeps expanding and expanding and expanding. He expands so far, farther than Reed can handle it, and Reed just has to let go. And now we're going to read some of the dialogue here just to really drive home the camp of the stuff. He says, the Super Skrull says, now do you realize how helpless you are against me? This is my Super Skrull voice, I guess. It's like a half a Kermit type thing. I am mightier than all of you, fella, on this planet.
It seems right.
First of all, Reed Richards saying fella feels very 60s to me. I don't see that happening nowadays. Reed Richards calling someone fella in the middle of this battle. Fella, on this planet, that's only called winning the first round. And then
hey there, did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fantastic. Now we're seeing a slightly cooler use of his powers here. He turns one of his fists, one of his arms, into a giant mallet, which makes me wonder, though, if he's Mr. Stretchy, would that mallet even hurt if it landed on you, or are you just going to stretch right into you?
Yes, because
you can explain this. Okay,
I can explain it because he can actually increase the density of his muscles, not to the point of having super strength, but when he expands to a certain point, he can go ahead and actually cause some damage. However, because of that, that's why he can also like lose energy really fast. Like he can get tired out. Like there's actually a joke in one Fantastic Four thing where he like makes himself a giant. And then when, you know, like he's stepped on somebody or done something, he like passes out because he's like, I have low blood sugar. So it's a very temporary thing. It drains a lot of him.
All right. Well, if there's a comic and there's a power, there's an explanation somewhere. And
the
somewhere
more you know.
Sometimes that explanation might just be because comics, which means they don't explain it. But in this case, it seems like they actually did. So thank you, Remso, for that more you know moment.
The more you know.
So yeah, they're going at each other, and the Super Scroll is so fast and stretchy. As in the time that Reed is swinging his big mallet hand, the Super Scroll stretches himself out all the way to the Palisades shore. Where's the Palisades shore? I don't know. Far from New York City.
I don't know.
Uses his stretchy powers for that. Uses his super strength to grab a cliff and then puts it over his head so that Reed just slams the cliff. This seems like a little more than necessary to defend yourself here against the stretchy hand noodle mallet, but it does seem successful. And like you said, yeah, Reed's hand is hurt because he must have changed his density, I guess. And now his whole arm is stretched out, but in pain, throbbing in that 1960s pain. But this is just the time for Ben Grimm to show up, the big gun, and he smashes his fist right through this little cliff that the Super Scroll is holding. Finally, someone lands a shot on the Super Scroll. But Super Scroll is not phased, of course, because he is the Super Scroll. Whacks Ben Grimm back, breaks this cliff over him. And I gotta include a little Ben Grimm dialogue here. Grimm says, "Why do all the cornballs I fight with May?" Oh, wait. First, I'm gonna go back to what Super Scroll was saying before. He says, "Well, your only weapon has ever been nothing but sheer brute strength. But now that you see what happens when you face someone whose strength is far greater than yours," and Ben Grimm says, "Well, why do all the cornballs I fight with make speeches whenever they try to toss a punch?" Because this is what every character, especially, I mean, Spider-Man perfected this, but especially in the 60s, every fight is a speech with everybody, but whatever. I mean, Ben, you could argue Ben is doing the same thing here. And so as they're fighting, the Super Scroll says, "So you did not care for my little monologue, eh?" Now, this is where, if this wasn't absurd enough, this is where we go from camp to
this is stupid.
What? It is so fucking stupid, but it's like stupid in the way that it makes me happy instead of angry.
It works. You know? Like, it's stupid, but it works.
So Super Scroll says, "So you did not care for my middle. You did not care for my little mom." Now he's like Yoda. I don't know. I haven't worked on my Super Scroll too much. "Well, when I am finished with you, you will never again hear me speak. You will never hear anything again. You may have forgotten that we Scrolls have the power to alter our bodies in any manner we choose. And now I choose to become a battering ram," as his Scroll frogman face first turns into this weird, almost like human bald guy face with some horns, and then just turns into the face of a ram as he shoots his neck out of this now green ram that is coming at Ben Grimm. Before I go further, what did you think of "I'm going to turn myself into a battering ram," as he literally turns himself into the animal of a ram and a battering ram at the same time? I wish I was
in the bullpen with Kirby and Lee as they were discussing how to do the scene, and Stan Lee was probably like, "Make him into a train or something," and then Jack Kirby is like, "No, we gotta make him a battering ram. The kids would love it."
Well, all right, but then you're at least gonna make him an animal ram, right? Like the animal, a ram. And Jack's like, "No, like an actual battering
like
ram."
Like a battering ram.
All right. All right, we'll do both. We'll do both. You see, I don't know why he's a 30s gangster now.
Deal.
We'll do both. You see, you make him a battering ram, and we'll make him a ram, and the fans are gonna love it. True believers. My impressions all need work. From Super Skull to Stan Lee, they all need work. Nonetheless, the battering ram, Ben braces for it. He's like, "I can handle anything. I'm good." And boom, this battering ram just knocks him for a loop. But luckily, by sheer coincidence of the way these things have unfolded, he flies right past the Empire State Building, is able to grab onto the Empire State Building needle, and then again cause massive, what I have to imagine is massive property damage to the top of the Empire State Building as he scrapes down it, just destroying the top of the building. He's like, dude, that's the Empire State Building. You know how expensive that's got to be? And how do they got to go fix that? They got to get a huge crane all the way up to that thing? Or what? Like, that, come on. Who pays for this? Do they pay? They must pay.
This is why everything in NYC is so damn expensive.
This is why we need, yeah, exactly. This is why the rent is too damn high, man. Ben Grimm always destroying escalators and historic buildings. Anyway, back to our battle, and now everything's just going crazy. I mean, he's using the flame powers on Mr. Fantastic. He's using his invisibility to knock out Johnny Storm, making him fly into a wall. He's just using all the different powers. Now, at first, he was using the power like against each person, so he'd use the strength against the thing. But now he's using the other powers against the other people. So it's just causing a whole tizzy, and he really is kicking their ass. They're not ready for this. Reed's hand, I do like the consistency. This reminds me again of selling in pro wrestling, and I think it's the little details like this that you just probably wouldn't see as much of today. 5 pages later, after this hammer mallet incident, as they're regrouping, Reed Richards is still holding his arm, holding his hand where it got smashed on the super scroll. It's a little thing, but it is the little things, whether it's the fucking battering ram that's ridiculous, the little thing, or whether it's a story little thing that really, it makes you feel like they care, you know what I mean? And it harkens back to, like, the best professional wrestlers, the ones that can build up the most sympathy are the ones that can sort of, they'll get an injury in the match and that body part will be worked on, and they're able to nurse that injury and build sympathy from the crowd by them continually nursing this injury as they still fight on. So that's how that's done in professional wrestling. So it's nice to see that same kind of consistency building our sympathy here, building, making us feel like, man, Reed Richards is still holding his fucking mallet hand 5 pages later. What are they going to do here? But it does build that. Okay, so how are they going to take this guy out here? Because they're just getting their asses kicked. Thoughts? Because I need a break.
Yeah.
So I need a break for more Fox and Sons. Goodbye.
Yeah, this is this is where it's like in comics, there was a formula for how the fights were, which is the guy has to appear like he's just unbeatable, and then the heroes are just really brought down. And oftentimes, you know, the powers of the Fantastic Four, like individually, they can't go toe-to-toe with a lot of people. But what I like about this group dynamic, and this is where a lot of team books either fail or succeed, it's how they work together, as we're going to see in the coming pages, that actually shows why they're a good superhero team and why, even though they might be mighty in their own right, there are always going to be threats that are more dangerous than them. Like, there have been many issues and stories where the Super Skrull will just completely kill any of them in their own right if they were ever to do it. But it's how they work together and it's how they figure things out is what makes them more interesting. I think that's the key to ensemble books. It's how do they bring out the best in each other.
Right. No, and that's always been the key to the Fantastic Four and why I always like this book, because this has been like one pretty much my favorite hero team, I guess, at least you would say, since I started reading comics. And as I've talked about on a previous issue, this was my very first comic that I've read, was an issue of the Fantastic Four. So I've been in on this from quite literally my comic book beginning. And, you know, they all have very distinct personalities and they all play off each other very well. Often their clashes and their personality clashes gets them into trouble. But in the end of the day, they always are able to, well, usually it's Reed that figures things out in some way, but he also doesn't see the full picture because he's such a scientismo, if you will, that he kind of needs the regular human perspective.
He misses the forest for the trees.
Exactly. Like, Reed is correct about everything, but he's often too analytical, which isn't, we need, because he is able to figure out the super sciencey parts of things in the end, but he always needs his teammates in the end to get him through this. Because if it was just him sitting in a lab analyzing, you know, who's going to punch the Super Skrull in the meantime?
Yeah.
Ben Grimm is the answer. So now this, I feel like in every Silver Age book, I say things like, now this is where it gets really ridiculous. So this scene is where Ben Grimm is now, he's luckily been rescued, I guess, from the Empire State Building by the fine people of the NYPD. They were just called, it says the New York City Police here. So I don't even know if they went by NYPD back then. But
I think maybe they're like, oh no, we need to scribble it in. Ah, shit, right. I got the acronym wrong. Just stick with it.
It's fine.
They just get
write
the point.
COPPAs on it. And Ben Grimm is hanging off this this like just like this rope ladder off of. He gets rescued by the Empire State Building off the rope ladder, and then the cops go and rescue the rest of the Fantastic Four as they're trying to get away. Like they're giving up. They're like, we gotta regroup. We're fucked here. Now the Super Skrull has taken it up a notch. Now he is invisible. Looks like Hawkman for some reason, and is shooting flaming arrows at them. So he is like, now he's combining his own powers and also making himself kind of look like Hawkeye just because he's doing a, I don't know. That was weird. Do you see that, how he's invisible, but almost looks
I think
like
they
Hawkeye?
Were trying to outline like his ears and everything, but it does look like Hawkeye. I totally see how you say that.
I just thought of it because they was doing an archery thing. So I was like, oh, did they just make him look like Hawkeye? But yeah, that's, you're probably right. It is a Jack Kirby attempting to do the invisible ears there. And he says, all right, screw it. Let him run. I shall not descend to their level of pursuit. So I like that Super Skrull is like, I'm not even going to run after them. Like, I'm the fucking Super Skrull. They can come find me. In the meantime, as you can see, I've put my flag down. I've claimed the Earth. So I'm just going to go ahead and be the leader of the Earth. And if they want to come at me, they can come at me. So yeah, he's like,
man, he's
okay,
still less destructive than George Bush was invading places.
Ouch. But does he paint pretty pictures of dogs? That's the question I have, and I'm not sure. I mean, it's possible we haven't seen that yet. A lot of Super Skrull tales to explore here. I would like a Super Skrull like year one. Like, I want to see what this guy went through becoming the Super Skrull, like how he was selected from the program, what it was. I'm sure it was torturous going through all of this to acquire all these powers. I want, like,
how many other Skrulls died in the process?
I want like an Alex Ross, Mark Wade, like a 6-issue, like epic deep dive on his origin story. But I don't know if we're going to get
that. That would be cool.
Anyway, back to our battle, and the team is regrouping here. As always, we have Reed trying to come up with a plan. Now, Reed does figure out, oh, wait, he's not just the reason he never runs into limits of his power is because he's actually getting power. Stay with me here for some comic science. He's getting power rays, whatever those are. Power rays are being beamed at him from the Super Skrull, the Skrull homeworld. So that's why, like, no matter how much they use their powers, he's always got more power than them because he's getting a constant supply of power fed to him, again, from the power rays. Now, how they shoot the power rays directly so that's hitting the Earth at the right time as it's rotating, I don't know. That's a question
that Earthers have been asking for years.
but anyway, that being said, yeah, he does figure out, like, okay, if we can just, we can't go to the Skrull homeworld. We don't have time for that shit to try to shut it down there. But I can put this implanting device on him and it will stop the reception of the power because I figured that out in 5 seconds. I just whipped this thing up as Reed often does. But how are we going to get it on him? That's the question. Obviously, we're going to use the Invisible Woman doing what she does best and not being seen. So that is the plan. And so they go out and they decide to challenge the Super Skrull. They say, hey, Super Skrull, you bitch, meet us on this island. What is it called? This is some deserted island. It's called Crater Isle. I think that's where they went to go swimming. So we're circling back and they're taking their little ICBM. No, they're taking the pogo plane, whatever that is. We're done with the passenger intercontinental ballistic missile. So they're like, look, meet us on Crater Isle and we'll throw down there. Let's do that. And he's like, all right, sweet. I love honorable plan battles for the fate of an entire planet. And, you know, back on the Skrull homeworld, they're watching and they're saying, like, all right, they're going to meet for the final battle. Skrull Emperor says, increase the power to full intensity. He must not fail, because Lord knows there's no other heroes if we don't take out the Fantastic Four. So yeah, they all go after him. They try to surround him, they distract him with Ben Grimm sort of fighting him and Johnny's Flame and Reed trying to contain him at the same time. And as they're doing this, and it seems like maybe this will work, we find out the secret power that was not shown to the Emperor before. What is the power, Remzo? Is the power of hypnotism. That's right. So the Super Skrull not only has all these Fantastic Four powers.
They kind of ditched this later on.
Yeah, this one was a two-panel only power. So he hypnotizes Ben Grimm. So he's like, oh, I can't move. Hypnotizes Johnny Storm. So now he's hypnotizing Reed. And Reed's like, I have to resist. I have to find a way to just hold on here. So as Ben and Johnny are both taken out because they've been hypnotized, they're just chilling now. And he is also hypnotizing Reed. We see the Invisible Woman jump on his back and plant the device. And then suddenly the Super Skrull is saying, what's happening? I feel strange. I feel weak, as though my strength is being sapped. It can't be. His impression is all over the map for me. And then we go back to the Skrull homeworld, who are just watching in real time, apparently on Zoom. Majesty, something is wrong with the power ray. It isn't making contact. Impossible. Keep trying, you Dalton. They eventually figure out, no, it's not us. Like, it's our power ray is beaming just fine. They did something and they interfered with it and whatever. So But nonetheless, although he's been weakened, as our narrator tells us, our mysterious narrator tells us, he still fights on. And he says, I've lost many of my superpowers because of you, but you won't escape me. I can tell where you are by the pebbles. He's chasing Sue here because, look, she has only the power to be invisible. You are by the pebbles that are falling behind you. I know you've descended into that crater, but where you can go, I can follow. And he follows her all the way until they trick him into basically falling into this pit. He falls down and because Reed just pulls her out, knows where she is, and he falls as he's lunging at her into this pit. And I guess that's where he lives now. Ben just says, they don't really tell you what happens. Johnny says, I hope you're comfortable down there, pal. You're going to be there for a long, long time. Poor Super Skrull, man. I want to see the Lost Years Super Skrull in the pit. I want to see him.
At least they turn him into a cow.
What's the movie where Jamie? Yeah,
Hours, like 72 hours, yeah, or something, where he cuts his arm off.
Yeah, where he cuts his arm. I want to see like the Super Skrull version of that, where he has to cut his arm off to get out of this cage, and they fucking bury him alive. They just bury him alive.
Was it before or after this that they turned a bunch of Skrulls into cows?
That was later down the road.
That was later. They're not very nice to them.
That came back in some other series too, right?
Back in Skrull Kill Crew. In which you have a bunch of Skrulls who have decided to join humanity. They go to a farm. With like the Punisher or somebody, and they end up like slaughtering this whole farm, and this farmer's like, what's wrong? And they're like, what, you didn't notice that you were putting out green milk? And as they kill them, they all turn into Skrulls who have been cows for like decades, and they're just like
oh my god, it was funny being cows. Finally,
we should cover Skrull Kill Crew at some point. That would be funny.
I'm game. So I like the premise, I'll tell you that. So they bury the Super Skrull alive because heartless. This is you don't see this nowadays so much. Like usually
they used to abandon people in a lot of places where they could like suffocate or starve to death.
Yeah, I mean, when you see it nowadays, when you see a quote-unquote hero, you know, sort of nonchalantly caring about what happened to whoever they're just fighting, it's usually when they're spinning that hero as sort of an anti-hero, like a Punisher type thing. But here, I mean, no, these are fully supposed to be heroic people who are just burying this guy and just leaving him. So it's over, and then we get there. The floaty head recap, as I call it, where we just they no longer have bodies. And now I guess we've broken the fourth wall again as they tell us what they're going to do. So Reed says, I've got to admit it, that red hot rascal certainly comes in handy because Johnny sealed the pit. So that we can suffocate this poor guy alive who was probably drafted into this, had no choice in the matter. He seemed actually pretty nice, like relatively speaking, when he arrived at the planet. He didn't just start killing people. He didn't start blowing shit up. He just said, hey, I'm here. I'm the Super Skrull. This is my planet now. Like, you know, if anyone wants to step to me honorably, we'll battle it out as the Fantastic Four did. Doesn't seem like
as that far as invaders go. He's like, right. It's a pretty good deal
on the scale of planetary invaders. He's not that bad a guy, I would say, at the end of the day. But nonetheless, despite that, he is buried alive. So he buries him alive, and Susie says, yeah, I guess we all have our uses, Reed, and except for you, really. And Thing says, yeah, I'd make somebody a snappy paperweight, which is our last line of this show is Ben Grimm making a paperweight joke. I didn't really get that. He wants to turn the Super Skrull into a paperweight. Is that what he's saying?
I don't know. The 60s are so weird.
And we got a little narration to wind us up here. A story has to end somewhere, and this seems to be as good a place as any. I love it. I don't know. We ran out of. I don't know what to say anymore. So the story's over. But be with us again next issue for more thrills, surprises, and startling fantasy in the fabulous Fantastic Four manner. The end. I think I miss these cheesy sort of like, see you next week, everybody, from Stan Lee. Like, I miss all of it. I miss Stan Lee. I think I have a theory that as soon as Stan Lee could no longer appear in Marvel projects is when everything went downhill.
Basically. Now,
that shouldn't be related because he wasn't involved creatively in any of that stuff, but it's related spiritually, I think.
When it felt like his fingerprint wasn't on things.
Right.
That's when everything kind of starts descending.
So maybe he had no actual creative control. He was like, yeah, sort of an executive producer in name only, I think, on a lot of this stuff. But maybe once he's gone, it's like, fuck it, the old guy's gone. Let's go. Let's do whatever we want. That's what it seems like anyway. So we miss you, Stan. God bless. God bless your campiness, because you certainly brought joy here. So it's always hard to me to rate a story like this, because it's hard. Like, if this story came out today and they were packaging it as, here's a modern comic book to read, you'd be like, this is terrible. What is this? But when you look at it in the context of the Silver Age and what comics were then, you got to look at it differently. So I'm going to let you start, Renzo, as I still have to process this myself, how to judge this.
Yeah, and I mean, I advise listeners, especially newer listeners, to go back and listen to a lot of the stuff we've done. We've done Bronze Age, a couple Golden Age, like that Submariner comic I've done, and some Silver Age. And we try and compare it to the contemporaries and the competitors at the time, and understand, like, when these were coming out. I mean, we're not dealing with, I mean, they were doing the stuff by hands. They weren't doing this on computers or anything. So given that, I'm going to give the artwork a 4 because I think this is just classic Jack Kirby. As he goes on later, that's when he really starts to define who he is. And I think that is really important. So, I mean, I think this is I'm going to give the artwork a 4 because it's good enough to be recognizable. It's good enough for the story. It's good. I know he does better later. So I'm also comparing him to what I know he does later because Jack Kirby is really coming out with that. Like, honestly, I think I said that the artwork in Eternals issue 1, which we covered about a year and a half ago, was like way more like in terms of art was like crazy Jack Kirby stuff. And that was a 5. So I'm giving the artwork a 4. I'm also going to go ahead and give the story a 4. This is a quintessential classic Fantastic Four story introducing the Skrulls and Super Skrull nonetheless. The dialogue is funny. The story feels good. This is easy enough for anyone to pick up, but this is also building upon who the Fantastic Four are. I'm giving it a 4 because it's a solid 4. I could go 4.5, but I don't have a reason for that. So I'm going to go ahead and just say 4. So I'm giving this issue, Fantastic Four issue 18, an 8 out of 10.
Very interesting. All right. Well, I want to try not to be too influenced by you. I don't think I'm going to be too far off. I was kind of thinking as I went along with this. Here's the thing, though. It's like there's what I think initially, and I think this happens more so with the Silver Age stuff. I tend to enjoy it more reading it back with you, and because we're kind of like joking around and looking at the camp more, and some of these lines that I might gloss over when I'm just reading it by myself, when I say them out loud, like it hits me differently because it's the extreme camp of it and the sort of hamminess of it comes across even more, and I notice things even more. So I think my score sort of, I had in mind about a 3.5 here for the writing anyway, and I think I continued to enjoy it more as I went because when you embrace the camp and the hamminess as part of it, as part of the package, as part of what they're trying to do for you, it's hard to knock off points for it, especially when it has me smiling. I've been smiling this whole episode. How when's the last time I smiled talking about something Marvel related, you know, for 45
minutes?
Not for a while. So Stan Lee has brought me joy. It would be silly to call this a 5, but I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go with a 4 on the writing. A little lower on the art. I'm going to go, like, I like Jack Kirby. I think he's done some incredible art. I don't think this is Jack Kirby's finest work. A lot of it's kind of, some of it is, you know, some of the, look, Hawkeye ears, for example. I feel like sometimes Jack Kirby, maybe in this era, was doing too much and sometimes just did stuff without as much detail as I know he's capable of. So I'm only bringing it to a 3.5, still above average, but I don't think this is necessarily Jack Kirby's finest work. So I'm going to go a little lower than you on the art, which does get me to a slightly lower score of a 7.5 for the art. No, I'm sorry. Yes, that's what I'm saying. 7.5 for the, no, wow.
7.5 for a total. So.
I'm in a math loop right now. A 3.5 for the art and a 4 for the writing, which is a 7.5, which brings me to an SPC. That's where I'm trying to go. SPC score of 15.5. Thank you very much. Oh, no one told me there'd be math.
Yeah, 15.5. It's a good Sunday read.
Indeed. And if you all appreciate us reading this for you and talking about it and reacting to it here, then what you could do, if you so chose, well, there's a couple things you could do. You could do the free thing, which we really like, and that is share the show, tell a friend about the show, go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating and a great review, tell people why you like the show. It's all viral, baby. We're all viral. We all are working on word of mouth here. So that's
we're
a wonderful
men
thing.
Of the people.
If you want to do that, we will be incredibly grateful. But if you want to kick it up a notch, if you want to just be a little bit cooler, you can go over to patreon.com/secondprintpod where you will see many, many tiers of options, which range up to and including besides just getting all the bonus audio content. Like now I'm doing a bonus show called Thunderstruck, going through the Thunderstrike series. I am doing Case of the Runs where I go through longer runs of comics as I'm doing with Jeff Johns JSA right now. Remzo gets in there and does Remzo rants. He does some, occasionally you get a very good rant like he did when his instant reaction to the Flash review.
That was all very ranty.
all sorts of bonus content for you guys. And what else, Remzo? You got a special going right now.
Well, we've gone ahead and already gotten somebody who's jumped into our summer special. This will go ahead and go until August 31st. If you sign up at the $5 level or higher, or if you're a current patron, you upgrade to the next tier, you will go ahead and get an autographed poster, and I will go ahead and donate out of pocket $1 to the Gary Sinise Foundation, which is helping military veterans and their families, providing them with entertainment opportunities and the resources they need.
I thought it was to help Gary Sinise get more acting roles. I was confused about this charity.
No, man, he's living off Forrest Gump for the rest of his life.
NCIS. I'm totally confused about.
He did NCIS for fun, man. Yeah, Lieutenant Dan has got it going on. And I want to just, people were kind of wondering why this charity. For many of you who have followed me for years, I'm a Army veteran, served in the Army out of high school, got out early 2021. My family, my father is now retiring from the U.S. Army active duty. So, I've always had passion for supporting military service members, especially their families. I think the families, even after the era of the Iraq War and everything, they don't get as much attention, but there's still a lot of needs and opportunities to help service members and their families even now. So while there are other military charities out there, I'm not keen on some of them that spend a lot of their resources on outings for their boards or paying Trace Adkins or whoever is doing all the celebrity endorsement stuff. I want to actually know who is actually providing back to the people that they want to help. And the Gary Sinise Foundation, in my opinion, is the best veterans charity in the United States. I've always donated to them annually, and this is just another opportunity to do it. So far we got one person. We got Ariel from Colombia. He went ahead and messaged me on Patreon today. He said, "You don't want to spend $200 on shipping for my $15 subscription? Hey man, I just want to support the show." Ariel, I promise you, as I messaged back, I'll find out how to get you that. We'll figure out something.
Send him some money.
we'll figure something out, man. We'll figure something out.
But we appreciate the support, Ariel.
Yeah, so we've got $1 for the Gary Sinise Foundation. Remember, join at $5 or higher, upgrade your tier, get a signed poster, and help give some cash, some schmeckles to the Gary Sinise Foundation. All that and more at patreon.com/secondprintpod. And if you want new content, we've been doing a lot of stuff over on Substack. That's secondprintcomics.substack.com. We got weekly articles, Sunday recaps, and of course all episodes of the show. You can catch the YouTube version and the Spotify links within those episodes and more. secondprintcomics.substack.com. So many ways you can go ahead and support the show today.
Indeed. That being said, we'll return once again next week. I think we'll be back probably doing a pop episode next week, looking at who knows what. We'll figure it out. We'll see it when we get there. But until then, Remzo, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Viewers, folks, it's sweet. It's simple. Whisper it to your lover during your nightly pillow talk. It's read comics, save the world.
Change the world. Save the world? Well, we can save it too.
Save it
and change it. Maybe we should change
it. Save and change.
Anyway, good night.
Good night, America.
Adios.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.